This episode of the Backside Ground Balls podcast is presented by The Performance Academy. For all of your athletic training needs, train with purpose at The Performance Academy. TPA houses a number of training resources from private baseball and softball instruction to team sports performance classes. Utilize advanced technologies like Output Sports, HitTrax, and TrackMan to take your game to the next level. On top of our elite staff and advanced technological capabilities, be a part of the TPA family and take advantage of the many resources our facility has to offer. We are super excited to announce that we are now partnering with Routine Baseball. For all of your clothing needs, athleisure, the sickest baseball gear you can get. We're talking hoodies, shorts, sweatpants, sunglasses, hats, any baseball style you can imagine. Routine Baseball has it, and we are now partnered with them. All you got to do is go to routine.com/backsideground ball. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. It's routine.com/backsideground ball and check out all the different options they have. You will receive 10% off your order today. One more time, routine.com/backsideground ball and get 10% off your order today. Want to go to a game? How about a concert? How about going to see classical music? Whatever you're into, there's only one place to get your tickets. And thankfully, we are partnered with SeatGeek, the essential resource for live events. For any of your ticket needs, make sure you go over to SeatGeek.com and use the code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is SeatGeek.com, promo code BACKSIDEGROUNDBALL to receive $20 off your first purchase.
And welcome back to the Backside Ground Balls podcast. Super excited to be back here on the pod. My name is Trevor Powers, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Dan Galati. Dan, how are we doing? We're recording here on a Tuesday evening. This will probably come out on Thursday, so just keep that in mind as we update our listeners on our regular lives.
Doing well. Hanging in there. Ready to record this pod. Good little midweek pod. Another week of college baseball as we inch closer to the postseason.
Yeah, 100%. It's getting to that stale part of college baseball where we kind of have an idea of who the top teams are. We spend a lot of time focusing on what the ACC and SEC have going on, and then it's just kind of feel like we're rinsing and repeating each and every week, which is why it's exciting, and I'm excited to talk about the topics that we're going to talk about today. Looked like you had something to say there.
Do you think that this part of the year would be more exciting if conference tournaments didn't exist?
Probably, yes. Especially because everybody, like the conference tournaments that, like nobody dials into the MAC conference tournament, the CAA, which CAA gets at large anyway, but the conferences that actually would be like only one team gets right. In, kind of SEC championship college football level. But yeah, I think like SEC, ACC, and even Big 12, Pac-12 probably shouldn't even have conference tournaments. You're probably better off taking the bottom eight and letting them help themselves out with like potentially like a Missouri going on a run and taking your auto bid or something like that. Like then rolling out there with the ones.
Right, because if you're like a fan, like of just college baseball, kind of like, you know, I don't have a favorite college baseball team. I guess it would be Georgia, but like, you know, I'm not a diehard. I don't have one diehard team. We cover it. I love a lot of these teams because you start to build relationships with people. You watch them all the time. So it's like you're not really hanging on the edge of your seat. Like it's interesting to see who's playing well going into it, and I think that matters. But like you're not as dialed in as you would be, like you said, if like you were watching a tournament where – just the winners move on to the postseason. And like, right, like if you look at the professional sport model and even college base or football a little bit, because their playoff is so small, like if you just like the regular season was all that counted, this time of year would be really exciting because people are positioning themselves for regionals. So it would be a lot more interesting. That was a fun view right there.
So, I mean, for anybody listening on YouTube right now, we're trying to get the eye tracker to stay on my eyes. I got to stare into the camera a couple more times, apparently, to make sure it's dialed in and good to go. But so what you're saying, Dan, is that you want to become an Ivy League, NEC, MEAC, MAC.
MEAC doesn't exist anymore.
The MEAC, oh, sorry. They all went to the NEC and divided up there. Sorry, RIP. You want to become one of those podcasts where we're just going to cover Ivy League happenings on the daily basis?
You want to talk about the Big South? I'll talk about the Big South right now. You want to talk about the Big South?
Yeah, let's talk about the Big South.
All right, let's do it. I mean, no, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying like building off your point of explaining why you call. No, I know. I'm just saying like there was a reason you called it stale, and that's the reason, right? Like, don't you think that's a big reason why it does kind of feel stale? Like you said, you really do know. Now, the Big 12, they're down a little bit this year, the Pac-12, like because there's not, you know, eight teams like the ACC and SEC mm-hmm. have. Like, there's some big series in the Big 12 this weekend. There's been some big series in the Pac-12. But on the whole, like when you look at everything on the whole, it's not as this time of year, like you said, you kind of know. Like, if you look at the ACC and SEC, you know who's real and who's not. And again, the tournaments are important because it's important to be, you know, riding a heater, I think, into a regional. But you go 2-2 in the SEC tournament, you still could be hosting a regional depending on who you are.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that it definitely makes this time of year tough and getting the juices flowing, which is why it's exciting to have so many new things to talk about, right? Last time on the episode, we had a couple fun conversations based off of Kentucky's pitchers that need to keep their arms by their side after they throw a pitch. We talked about Georgia's pitchers using stick. Apparently, that guy looks – I mean, the John Boy breakdown was – all I took away from that was the fact that he's got a really good heater, and stick or no stick, it was hoppy that day, and it was pretty good. But speaking of the opposition, Jim Sosnagel dropped an absolute bomb on the college baseball world today. Starts going Tex Aggs on an interview today, just casually drops the fact that new implementation of broadcast and iPads and everything that goes along with that, that you basically would have to pay to have the feed not directly feed into your dugout with the catcher's signs, a la Houston Astros scandal coming out of 2019. And he said one team in the SEC just got caught with the feed in their dugout, and they'd been playing with it for every home game this season. Fascinating conversation point. We'll get into the teams, Dan. What's your initial thought process when you hear something like that?
I'm not shocked. Like, of course, was kind of my initial reaction. You know, I worked for a program that was accused of doing this exact thing. We were at the Division II level, though, so we didn't have TVs or implements to look at the feed.
I'm not going to.
Yeah, we had a head coach. We were on the road, and a head coach actually got upset for us hanging a camera. That doesn't matter. We were accused of this before a game, and we kind of still laugh about it. That coach refers to that program as the tech program, as if it's a bad thing that they care about player development.
Also care about treating players nicely, but besides the point.
The point that I have or my thoughts were, it's not surprising. Like, of course this is going to happen. We just got done college football season. I guess it's been a couple months now, but we just got done a college football season where Michigan, the national champion, gets accused of some type of cheating. That's just the world we live in, especially in sports. Everyone's looking for a competitive advantage. When you played at the SEC level, or the Big Ten level in football, and people's jobs and reputations are on the line, and there's a lot of money that changes hands, people are going to do things that might cross the line. And I'm sure that you could talk to a lot of people out there who would kind of poo-poo this. They would just be like, whatever. Like, it's not cheating, or it's not that big of a deal. You still got to hit the ball, whatever it may be. But as we implemented tech into sports, and
as the stakes continue to grow with the type of money that these coaches are paid, with the type of money that boosters are putting into these programs to pay players, TV contract money, like this is what happens, right? Like, look how much white collar crime there is, just like speaking from a non-athletic standpoint, look how much white collar crime there is in our country when you start dealing with tons and tons of money. When stakes mm-hmm. get higher and raised by a lot of money, like most of the time, the people who get put in jail for tax fraud and tax evasion and people who are playing the stock market are all rich as can be, right? Like you never hear, like it's never your neighbor next door in your, you know, single family neighborhood that's going to jail for something like that. It doesn't happen. It's when stakes get higher and we're talking about a ton of money that people do stuff that steps out of bounds because pressure builds on you. So I'm not surprised by this at all. I'm not even... Because it's coming out now and because the team got caught like in the middle of the season, it's not even to me, the reaction is even less than the Houston Astros because the Astros went on and won a World Series and, you know, that just kind of tainted the entire thing, which I'm unfortunately, Ken Rosenthal, I'm still not going to feel happy for them for winning a couple years later.
We don't need a Ken Rosenthal rant right now. As much as I tried to divert us into the CAC baggage down the road too at the beginning of your statement. So we're off the rails a little bit here on both ends of this podcast. It's late here on this Tuesday. But I think you made a bunch of really good points too, right? White collar crime, talking about wins and losses where it really matters. Coaches are paid at a high level. Boosters are involved. There's a desire to win. I think what would be the most disappointing, and I guess maybe it shouldn't even be disappointing, we should just come to expect this in our society at the end of the day, is the fact of the matter that with the outcry that came from what the Houston Astros did, I find it very surprising that people didn't try to be more creative. And now, again, I don't know the outline of what this really was, how it came about, how they utilized it, whatever it was. But like the fact that you have a collection of 45 individuals, at least with players and coaches, not to mention support staff, that all were probably had differing opinions on the Houston Astros scandal. And then just to let that happen in your lap, in your program, is like one of those things where like, you know how wrong it is in baseball to be doing something like this. I'm sure there's people in that clubhouse that sat there and were frustrated because they're Atlanta Braves fans. I mean, we're talking about a Southeastern program, like, you know, teams that are competing at a high level. I'm sure there's Yankees fans in that dugout or somebody that was competing, you know, for the same crown that the Astros were and called them out and were pissed about it. That's just where it's like, it's tough. If you came up with a more creative way and you found like it was valuable and stuff like that, but like the effort that it takes to cheat, that's pretty high tech right there. You know, just ignorance and just ego and everything that comes with it.
I'm sure there are people who have found more creative ways. We just haven't caught them.
True. Right. Like, 100%.
No question that like I also wouldn't be shocked if we heard of another scandal tomorrow of a team doing something completely different, you know, or next week or at the end of the year, or 2 years from now.
Or that they're not the only one.
Yeah, I'm sure that like this, pitch stealing happens all the time. It used to just not be, you know, I do think there's, and it's, this is where it becomes gray for me is because, you know, if you're standing on second base and you're out there long enough and you can decipher the signs and signal it to the hitter, I think it's okay.
Yeah, 100%.
But also, like, this is what I don't understand. At least at the power levels where we do have the money, why isn't everyone just using PitchCom?
That's a good point. But also, how many teams aren't using PitchCom? I didn't even think about that.
That's what I'd like, because that was one of my things is like,
because I don't think I've seen. I mean, I've been to a couple games. I've watched a lot of games on TV.
I would say most. But like, that's what I don't understand. Is like,
so where's the value then? Wow.
To think about it for a second. I'm not quite sure what the value would even be then if you're not getting signs. Location is the only thing.
Yeah, but location. That would be so late that.
I'm with you.
I didn't even think about that. That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, that's what PitchCom was. Like, I mean, in football, like, helmet communication was illegal, right? Like, so what Michigan did, and again, I think the whole Michigan thing was overblown. I only caught wind, like, got fired up about it because I thought it was going to be the difference between a game that I was going to, and then once I realized they still lost, I was like, it's really not that big of a deal. But, like, helmet communication was outlawed in football. Like, coach to pitcher and catcher communication is not outlawed in college baseball, and you're allowed to do it, and you're, if anything, encouraged to do it. So how many teams did it even make a difference for, I guess, is another question. So, I mean, again, I think that changes my perception on it, quite frankly. I'm not saying it's right if they were using it and utilizing it to actively bang on a trash can, you know, shout out player's name, whatever it is, to get a leg up on the competition, of course. But I think the fact that most of the SEC schools, like you said, have a ton of money, they have money to implement this system of, you know, broadcasts and iPads and technology. Like, I would assume most are using some form of PitchCom.
You would hope, and you would think. I would agree with you. And also, I don't want to downplay this because, again, it's like scummy if you're doing it that way, I think, because, you know, there aren't, you can't, I think what makes it so wrong to me is you can't defend against that. You can't defend against the camera going and then going into the dugout. Guy on second, you can defense that. You can switch signs. Mm-hmm. You can make it more complicated. Get him off of second base. Don't give up the double that puts him there. Like, all those things. Like, if it's coming from a coat, like if your pitcher's tipping, you know, gripping the glove, if your catcher's not, you know, being careful and one of the base coaches can get it. Like, those are things you can guard against. Camera in center field, outside of ripping the camera down, there's nothing you can do to defend against that. So that's what bothers me. But in this era of college baseball, and I know we're going to – I'm kind of want to segue us here. In this era of college baseball, 306 isn't that impressive.
No.
Right? Like you're only hitting three. If you have the signs and you know, like, that's why I think most teams still, like, it hasn't mattered for most teams, and why this probably isn't a bigger story when they were caught is probably because, to our point here, most teams are using PitchCom, so it probably didn't factor in too much because you're only hitting 306. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Tennessee at home is hitting 340 as a team without cheating that we know of. So if you're only hitting 306 and you're cheating, not very impressive.
You ain't cheating very good, I can tell you that much.
It's not changing good. The game very much.
No, not at all. 306 in college baseball is slightly above average. You guys are just okay at home, I guess. You're not really putting fear in any pitchers. Let's talk about the splits here. So, good friend, Farmer 1906 on a message board. Shocker, message boards are the best detectives that this country has. Outweighing FBI, CIA, anything you could imagine here. We got Arkansas with the largest gap, a 88-point gap between a 299 home average and a 211 road average. Caveat here, anybody who does their research that wants to look this up, Dan and I did it before the podcast, 9 road games for the Arkansas Razorbacks. So again, small sample. So that's always a factor into this as well, is if you've only played 9 road games up to this point in the year, which a lot of these SEC teams, they host early in the year, they go to some big tournament, and then depending on how many road series they get in the SEC, that's pretty much all the road games they get. We have the Georgia Bulldogs, who are hitting 332 at home, 251 on the road for a 81-point difference. Mississippi State is pretty close here with a 310 home average and a 233 road average. Vanderbilt is pretty exact here. Jim Schlossnagel during the interview said 306 at home and 206 on the road. We, Dan and I, assume, and I'm sure most people assume, that he wasn't exact in what he said. Vanderbilt's hitting 306 at home, 233 on the road with a 73-point difference. Missouri, if you're cheating, you guys probably, honestly, like, I think there should probably be there should be a rule in the league that says Missouri can cheat just because they're that far below the rest of the competition in terms of competitive balance. So maybe cheating would make them more formidable out of an opposition because they're one of the worst offenses in the country. I mean, they're hitting 279 at home with a 219 road for a 60-point difference. And like we just said, Missouri is not that great. Everybody else, there's not a single team that hits better at on the road than home. And the smallest gap is 19 points. So again, when we look at an 88-point gap, if we assume that it is Arkansas on a small sample size or one of those teams in Georgia, yes, there is a difference between them and LSU and South Carolina at the bottom, but every team has a sizable gap.
Right. And everybody, like, that's so that's kind of the other thing here. Maybe a lot of people are like, you could take it one way. Maybe a lot of people are cheating, but we've come on here and we've talked about how, and especially in the SEC, like, going on the road is tough. So, like, unless all of those teams, because
That's what I was gonna say. Maybe points, this is the reason
points,
why
77 points, maybe, but like, you talk about all those differences, like, all of those are pretty much the same. So, if you're pointing to one team and you're saying, they're cheating, they're hitting 100 points higher at home than on the road. A lot of these teams are, because this year, going on the road in the SEC in most years is really tough and it's not easy. And that's why, again, that's why I think, like, I just think there's so many factors in here. I think it's a story for sure, but it's not as earth-shattering. And I also think it's, like, hard to – I mean, it's fun to look at this here and kind of wonder. But then, like – and when I first heard it, I was like, oh, my – like, my – kind of timeline of reaction was like, whoa, like, this is a big deal. Yeah. And then it was like, wait, PitchCom, wait, everyone in the SEC stinks on the road. Wait, hold on. I don't, how much does this actually matter? You know what I mean? Like, I'm still kind of trying to process it because it's like the biggest takeaway, I think, truly, I'm half kidding. The biggest takeaway I have here is Tennessee mashes.
Tennessee mashes, there's no doubt about that. I'd agree with that. And again, I just think that because there was a part of me at different points in this year when I'd go and you know, like me and you were talking about, like we talk about it off air, we talk about it on air, we talk about it all the time. It's just a matter of, oh my God, this is going to be the death of me.
Some more camera troubles for my guy.
Yeah, I guess I rushed in to get. And we can't go back. Remember the last time we lost power on my end? Like, it's just going to be like this for the rest of the day. I kept wondering what it was. Like, you know, what could be the biggest road dip? And, like, there was a part of me that's like, are they stealing? Like, you know, like, there was just like a hunch. Like, maybe teams are stealing signs at home. Maybe they have some form of system. Because, like, it literally made no sense. Like, I get Mississippi State, the dude, they pack it out. Swayze pack it out. You know, Arkansas packs it out at home. Like, yeah, like, that matters. But, like, the home road splits in the SEC are, like, insane. Like, insane. Like, if one team is cheating, they are all cheating because every team is significantly better at home. And I think that's definitely a part of the conversation that needs to be had is, like, it was so – the home road splits as teams and records was so blatant that it was hard to not look and see, like, maybe is there something else here when you actually look at the numbers and look at the teams. And, again, like you said, it's just like everybody stinks on the road in the SEC.
Right. Everybody stinks on the road in the SEC. Do you think anything comes of this?
Yes. I don't think we have any Pete Thamels in this sport. I was already trying to pull back the thread of our connections to try to figure out who we could get, you know, that would kind of give us some insider information on who it may be. As of right now, if it was in the SEC, I'd be pretty, or if it was the ACC that had this crackdown, I'd be pretty confident that the backside ground balls could get to the case of it and we could find out who it was. But in the SEC, we're not as familiar with the SEC country at this point in time. So we did not have as much connections, but I was trying to pull back the thread. So I don't know who is going to go through like the deep dive of maybe breaking this news outside of just maybe the NCAA dropping a slap on the wrist at the end of the year.
So that was kind of my question there is like, because I don't think anyone loses their job over this.
Well, no, my initial thought was yes.
Unless it's like a, they would, you know, a Dobo. Like that, the only one who would lose their job is like a director of baseball ops. But maybe a couple wins here or there are vacated. Yeah, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, that's what I like, because college football, it's so much easier to limit scholarships or to find. There's so much money and things in that sport that, like, what are you going to do? Take them from 11.7 to 11.3? Yeah, 11. Like, come on. We already screw these coaches in trying to get them. If it is Arkansas, like, and going back to the teams that we listed, like, there's two teams on that list that I would be very surprised if their head coach was like, okay with that. But again, these guys are in the SEC. Like, these guys have more job security than anybody. And Dave Van Horn and Tim Corbin, like that, like, I don't know. Maybe Wes Johnson was just bringing some MLB flavor to the SEC.
Just thinking that, but I didn't want to say it because I don't want to speculate because one, I'm a Georgia fan. Two, I didn't want to speculate because I don't want to put rumors out there and really try and guess it at what people are doing. But that was kind of my thought too. I also think yes, comes from the MLB. They probably, you know, having feeds into the dugout is huge. A&M just played against Georgia, so they were probably doing research. I know it was in College Station, but they were probably, you know, they were doing a lot of scout beforehand. Bold move, first time head coach doing something like that was my other thought.
Hey, I mean, I respect the crap that he has his pitchers using stick. I'm sure he didn't learn that at Georgia or just start doing that when he was the head coach. Cough, cough. National championship. Ty Floyd, 22 inches of vertical movement on his fastball in Omaha is just, oops. I don't know where that came from at 97 and 98. I'm sure he wasn't. Yeah, I would love to know what his minor league data is with the Cincinnati Reds. And I'd wonder if there's a drop off because we've never seen that before from specific programs that just happen to have guys drop off in pro ball. But
yeah, don't call that program out.
Yeah, we don't need to do that. I would love to go sit down with their coach. Either of them. Both the programs that are notorious for their guys.
Don't call those guys out.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think anything comes from it, to be honest with you. Like you said, slap on the wrist. Like, you know how at the end of every college football season, there's like all these like, oh, this school reported themselves for, you know, an extra coach was on the field at practice.
Yeah, Greg Sankey's in for a tough baseball week. I'll tell you that much.
Probably. But Greg Sankey's
He's probably investigating Georgia baseball right now for the sticky stuff, which, I mean, what do you think comes of that? Do you think anything comes of that?
I can see that kid being suspended. Although he's tough without proof.
You think it's that obvious? Yeah, like is what we have in video form obvious enough that...
So no, it's not obvious enough to actually make a suspension like happen. I was going to say stick, but I didn't want to use a pun. but it's like anyone who... I'm 100% convinced. I know he was, right? Like there's no doubt in my mind that there was...
No doubt.
Right. But I don't think there's enough there to be like to that you could justify suspending him because, you know, there would be an appeal process and it's like, okay, what's the proof? This video of you can't actually see sticky stuff. Like, oh, I was praying.
Yeah.
I was praying before. I always pray before my outings.
Yeah.
My glove.
Yeah. And then just at the end of the day, like just being like, well, nobody caught me in the act. Like,
correct. Like, and you so can't go like, back and prove that. So, no, I guess nothing comes from that either. I doubt they even invest. I could guarantee you this. Next time that kid takes the mound, the opposing coach is going to come out of the dugout and be like, can we check him?
Oh, yeah. If he gives up a couple fastball homers and, like, his fastball significantly loses life on it the next outing, that would just be, like, I think that would just be a cool thought, cool baseball experiment right there.
I also think, like... Cell phones just continue to ruin the world. We can't have anything. Yeah.
Come on, be in the moment, Texas A&M fans. You guys were already winning the series. Just be in the moment.
Honestly, like, can I just rant real quick?
Yes, because my video is probably going to go away. See?
Just continue to solidify you're the biggest losers in the world, Texas A&M. Like, really? Like, of course it's you guys. We got snitches out there that are Texas A&M students filming the other team's reliever getting a little stick on their glove and crying after. Like, you're the best team in the country. Finally, you have a team that's, like, playing above expectations in a sport for the first time in your stupid school's history, and you're crying about it? Give me a break.
I'm so going to clip that just so we can go viral in Aggie. Do it. I think it would be good.
You got, like, I mean, it's bad enough you guys do those weird culty bonfire things that before football games on Friday nights. It's bad enough that, yeah, I don't.
As long as we don't
go win another agriculture national championship. That's all you've won national championships in.
True. Like, just as long as we don't criticize Ball for, but that's pretty
cool. No, that's cool. They do that. It's kind of the whole. I mean, I'm kind of kidding because, like, I get it, but, like, just kind of stinks that we got snitches out here doing that.
Yeah, I mean.
And of course, it turns into a John Boy breakdown and on and on. Like,
all I know is that guy.
Kids heater, like, was hopping.
It was really good. And then also, let's just do it in the dugout. Like, bullpens are very open. Yeah, but it's very obviously, like, open space. Yeah, that's another
thing. I mean, I guess I should have. I'd take back my rant a little bit against the Texas A&M fans. Kind of, not really. But,
like, just be smarter.
Yeah. Cheat better.
Yeah, like, come on, dude. Oh, my gosh. So, a couple other things happening as we speak. We have, since we talked about the Jim Schlossnagel thing already, I'm just going to rock with this here. We've got ECU up to number 5 in the polls. We've got Charlie Condon just hit his 30th home run against Kennesaw State. That park is a bandbox, so wouldn't be surprised if he gets 31 by the time this podcast comes out. Wake Forest struggling again. Starting to really lay the foundation of being worried. They look like they're probably going to be a 2 seed in a regional, at least, maybe a 3 seed. And then UNCW and NC State are battling at this point in time. Also, UC Irvine, we got a little bit of West Coast flavor. We talked about it in our Omaha 8. They are also breaking into the top 10.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. The Wake Forest thing, obviously, like, they just can't. Nothing is coming to save that team. I don't know what we're doing. This would be 3 straight midweek losses. They obviously had the They had the bad series loss last week against Notre Dame. So that's kind of crazy. I think the big story here is, like, some of these mid-major programs. Like, Irvine, it's been a while since we had UC Irvine be this good in college baseball, which is fun. And ECU, like, talking about a program that's kind of felt like they're on the cusp for the last, I don't know, several years now. They always have a really good team. They have a great atmosphere. Everyone's just kind of waiting for the year they break through to Omaha. This might be the team to do it.
Mm-hmm. It would be really cool if they could do it. I think that this is the opportunity for any team across the country to really make that push and potentially not only make it to Omaha, but win. I think that we talked about Texas A&M being the best team. Tennessee has their question mark, but all of these teams, like, there is not a team that's supremely talented. Or, again, Wake Forest was supposed to be that team that came into the year with 5 or 6 first round picks, similar to LSU last year or some of the teams in the past that have been dominant. And those guys have just underperformed, a lot of them. I mean, every one of them, I think, every one of them. I mean, which guy has, out of those 5 that could have potentially been first round picks, has performed to the peak of what we'd expect them to be in their junior year of college? I mean, Chase Burns has been good and electric, but he hasn't been, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's pitching to, like, a mid-3, just kind of standard for what he's been his career. And obviously Hartle and Massey hasn't given any length. Hartle has really struggled. Nick Kurtz was hurt, has a ton of home runs, but he's only hitting 310 on the year. Seaver King has been productive, but not like dynamic super. I'm not going to get into that. I saw somebody compare Siever King to Mookie Betts, and I was like, well, that is a tight comparison. And it was, I mean, just like athletically, like, can he play all the food? Yeah. Is he a smaller guy that's speed and athletic? Yeah. But like, sometimes with cops, we need to actually have some like statistical backing on what we're going to say here.
I've been controversial enough tonight, but there's some lazy comps people make in the sports world.
Oh, yeah. True.
Siever King and Mookie Betts. I'll throw another one out here that maybe will lead people down the road in football off the top of my head. Ladd McConkey to Cooper Kupp. If you know, you know. But yeah.
Prefer Wes Welker or Julian Edelman.
Exactly. So all of those things, there's people really like, sometimes we just get so into evaluating and we want to be the first to, you know, use buzzwords, which drives me
nuts. I guess
there's people on social media who it's like, do some people struggle to come up with like the same scouting words? Cause like, it's like, I feel like they just like reach in, they close their eyes and reach into a little baggie and pull it out. It's like athletic mover, explosive, you know, explosive. Like, it's just like, here are the scouting words I'm just going to throw on people.
Yeah. I do say, and I don't mean this in like a physical standpoint, but I do think there is something to be said about utilize like somebody who looks like frame, build, mover as a particular athlete. It's very easy, and maybe it is lazy to comp them to it, but it is very like I find myself doing it as well.
Yeah, but if like just make sure the comp makes sense. Like, make sure the comp makes sense. If you're gonna like, that's my only ask. Is like, it is fun to play the comparison game, and you know, we talk about it all the time. Like, it's just, people love, like, there's a huge section of baseball people who mostly enjoy talking about prospects because it's fun to just dream on guys.
Yeah,
more so than, and we do like, we talk about it all the time, right? But like, make the comparison make sense.
Yeah, well, Mookie, it's not the worst comparison that I've ever heard in my life. Let's just put
it's
it
not
that
the
way.
Worst. But I also
I think see it's where a, they're it's coming a, it's from. A big I see where I said person's coming from. But it's he hasn't come like if he lit the world on fire in the ACC this year, I would give it to you. But he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire. And you're talking about arguably the best hitter in baseball. Like I say that, and you're not like far off
top. Top three
at the very top least. Three
top,
if
top three yeah, player top, like yeah I mean yeah just one of the best players that we've seen in our generation without question.
There should be a comp off limits list. Like, nobody comps anybody to Barry Bonds. Mookie's on that list right now.
Yeah, and like Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and like there's a couple of like Bryce Harper, like there's just guys that like it's hard to make those comparisons.
Mike Trout is the classic look-alike one. Clint Frazier was a Mike Trout comp. Jason Dominguez was a Mike Trout comp.
You have tools and no neck. Right.
Yeah, tools. You're thick, short. If you could fit in a linebacker room you're good at baseball and you're athletic, you're getting a Mike Trout comp. Right. Guaranteed. And draft day.
And like, how do you comp anyone to – like, there's just certain players that like –
Honestly, again, there's Juan a statistical Soto, comparison.
Like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto for me are in those categories too. It's like you just can't – like there isn't like – oh, that there, he reminds you of Juan Soto? Juan Soto was 19 taking Garrett Cole deep in the World Series when Garrett Cole had like a .4 ERA. You're talking about a junior in college. He's already 2 years older than him hitting in the ACC. Like there's a difference here. You can't make that comparison. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge is 6'7", and like it's tough. There's just certain guys that
like Bryce again, there's
on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 and skipped high school to go right to college.
Nothing I respect more than when I hear somebody give just the most underwhelming comp. Nothing I respect more. Yeah,
you tell me this like, reminds you of Pete Cosma. I respect his credentials.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I heard one for a draft guy for this year. It was like just like Steven Drew, and I was like, yes, I love it. It's like it's just realistic. Like it's the only thing that's realistic. Yeah. All right, Dan, you take control here. Let's talk about this.
Can I just real quick give some love to Irvine?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, they're 32-8, 14-4. They don't have the most impressive resume. I think their best wins are probably Tulane and UCLA. They've gotten swept in their season series by USC, so there's still some questions. We all know that the Big West isn't the best conference, but they're 14-4 in conference. They're hitting 311 as a team. They have 42 bombs. They have 92 doubles, and they are kind of setting the world on fire a little bit offensively. So shout out to UC Irvine. In a year when the Pac-12 is down, there will definitely be concerns about the pitching staff when it comes to postseason play, because as a whole, as a team, they're pitching close to a 5 ERA. So not setting the world on fire from an arm standpoint, but just really fun. And we, you know, West Coast is West Coast baseball is typically really good and really fun. This year's been down a little bit. Happy to see a team like UC Irvine. And that's always what's made college baseball fun. Like, you remember playing MVP 06 and
Fulton, yeah. Like
one of the best teams.
Oh yeah.
Like just some
we need to get off teams. We need to get a streaming. We'll start doing Twitch streams of MVP 06.
Okay. I'm in on that. But here you go. I thought we'd play a little game tonight because it's the midweek, because me and you are tired of just previewing weekend series. We feel like we've talked about a lot of these teams over and over again. I wanted to see what it would look like if we could build basically what I'm going to call an Omaha Frankenstein. So I'm going to take different pieces, whatever pieces we want from programs around the country, any programs we want, and put together basically a team that we think would have no problems getting to Omaha this year. Okay, so a couple criteria for you. We're going to take a stadium. We're going to take a head coach. We're going to take an ace, so a number one on the mound. You are going to take a position player. You're going to take a starting rotation. Okay, and
you get your ace in the starting rotation.
You get to add this ace to a starting rotation. I will say this. Let me put it this way. If you have the same, like if the rotation you want also includes that pitcher, then you don't need to do mm-hmm. both. I'm cool with that. You can get a position player and in an offense. I forgot to put offense on the rundown. I'm sorry. So you get a lineup as well. You get to throw one position player from another team into an already existing lineup. Same rule applies if you want to take, you know, Gardner Webb's offense and your one player is Alec Burns just for example's sake, then you don't need to do both, right? Obviously. And a bullpen will be the last piece of this.
Cool. I'm in. This will be the last thing I'll ask. Can you overlap at all? If I pick Gardner Webb Stadium as well.
Yeah.
Can you pick them again?
Yes. If you want Mams and you want to play at the Bob, go ahead. Like, I'm good with that.
Perfect.
Like, that's absolutely fine by me. Do you want to kick this off? Have you had enough time to think about this? Do you want to kick this off? Do you want to take a stadium?
You take the stadium. I'm going to think for a second.
Okay, so stadium was hard for me, and a lot of people are going to call me crazy because, you know, you go to SEC because they seat so many people in incredible atmospheres down there. The dude, when it's rocking, Swayze, you get beer showers, Ball Six at Texas A&M, and the other team will get caught cheating by one of the fans filming them. Bomb Walk or the Box, yeah. Like it goes on and on.
I'll call him the 12th man for nothing.
It goes on and on and on in the SEC. There's a stadium that I first went to when I was 16 years old. I got to play there. We've been back several times this year. And every time I go, I love it more and more. And I just think for some reason, I think because you're also getting – you're taking the town with this when you take the stadium, obviously. I'm going with the Bosch, man. I love going to the Bosch. We've been to a couple games up there. Like, you tweeted out that beautiful picture over the weekend. Like, Chapel Hill is just an unbelievable college town. Every time I walk into there, it just feels like college baseball. Especially when you have a beautiful night. I know the atmosphere and the fans. I've been critical of them. Wine and cheese, that's great. I'm more about playing surface, views, vibes. Every time I walk into the Bosch, I'm like, man, this place is just so college baseball. It's perfect. The location of it, the way it looks. You got dorms, you got, you know, you got, I don't know, all of it. I just love every time we've gone. I've had a blast, and I think it's just a beautiful stadium. So I'm going with the Bosch. Sorry if I took yours.
No, you did not take my answer because we're at it. So is this a competitive advantage to get to Omaha?
Sure. Yeah. You can take it any way you want.
It could be whatever.
You can take it any way you want. Yeah.
Because I still remember, actually, ironically, it's a day that you'll never forget for positive reasons. But I just still remember sitting there waiting for your wedding, watching the UNC regional. And just like that stadium under the sun is like.
Yeah.
Baseball X-rated.
And when you like, get close to sunset. Oof.
Yes, it is really nice. I'm going with Baum Walker. Every time I turn on a super regional or a regional and Arkansas is playing a home game, that place is rocking. They haven't won a national championship, which is a surprising thing to a lot of people, or at least recently in the Dave Van Horn era, which is maybe why they're stealing signs, because they feel like they need that extra edge. Even though last time I checked, you aren't the home team in Omaha. So just defeat the purpose once you get there. But that place is rocking. I love anything that gets outfield seating and you just get those people that are just out there just going nuts, grilling. SEC country just means more. All the stuff that comes with that, it's really, really a sight to see. Would love to get out there for a game at some point. So, Coach Van Horn, I'm out here riding for you. You guys aren't stealing signs because you guys can't hit. So I'm going to defend you to the nth degree here. 299 at home still ain't very good. So we're not going to believe that you're doing that. And if you want to welcome us out, we'll come out for any regional or super regional. But I think that place is top of the line. Tough choices outside of that, but there's always some buzz in stadiums. But I think Baum Walker is the one that I always like. Ooh. And then when they call the Hogs, I love that.
So that was my runner up. So that's a good answer. Because that was absolutely my runner-up, and my decision came down to, do I just care about views and vibes, or do I want an intense atmosphere that's intimidating to play in? I went for views and vibes. You go coach.
Yeah.
Since I got
to coach. First. So I'm going to go with – my guy is going to be Jim Schlossnagle. He's at the top of the rundown here. Guy just knows how to get more out of his team. I don't know if there's any value in that, any evidence, any truth. I don't know. There probably is at some point in juncture in coaching. But the guy has taken TCU, which is a very, very great historic program. But mostly it's very, very great and historic because of what he's done with the program. So he's taken TCU to multiple trips to Omaha. He's had them in contention each and every year. He's going to do the same thing each and every year he's at Texas A&M. He just seems to be the one coach that genuinely gets the most out of his team every single year. Does not matter what they've got. Does not matter what they've written. They don't have to have great recruiting classes. They don't have to hammer the transfer portal. When they do, it's great, which is why the move to Texas A&M, I think, is going to be very fruitful for him and for Aggieland, because of the fact that, like, if this guy can get what he got out of this TCU, give him investment, give him a fan base that packs that place out, give him resources to go win in the transfer portal, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, that's a great pick. That's a great pick, obviously. Very successful in his career, and I think, you know, we've talked about it time and time again on here, especially this year, the resources they have. Look, I like playing these games because when you do made-up stuff like this, you can let your biases show. We live in the middle of ACC country. There's only so many of these head coaches that I've actually had the chance to be around and interact with. I know they're really underperforming, and they've been pretty much a disappointment from the word go. But there's something special about Tom Walter.
Oh, my God. Just great human.
Just a good guy. I would want to play for him. Just the way he interacts, I think, with his players, with everybody he comes across, treated us like gold the day we were on campus. We took a lot of his day, and he didn't complain. He was cool with it.
He might have after we left, but...
Maybe, but not to our faces. He was, you know, he interacted just like a 10 out of 10 human being, 10 out of 10 guy, and I think a great baseball coach. What he's built at Wake Forest has been extremely impressive, even if they are not playing up to their expectations this year. So I'm going with Walt.
Best hirer in the country.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's held on to Bill Cilento, so I'm sure he'd kill it if he had to get a guy to run the offense, but pitching coach-wise?
Yeah, Hobbs and Moose, yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, pretty good. He's done a pretty good job there.
I think that's what you told him in that interview. Go check out that interview and that day on our YouTube page.
I did.
All of it, if you missed it.
I parlayed that in there. Oh, I segued that in there. Perfect.
It was awesome. But seriously, Backside Ground Balls Media on YouTube. Go check out the video of the facility tour we did there and the hour-long sit-down that we had with Walt. It's like just you'll
– Dude, I want to play like for your team already, by the way.
What's like, that?
I'm over here building an Omaha contender. You're over here like I'm ready to transfer in.
I think vibes matter. I think vibes matter. And I get to go first for Ace here. Actually, here, can I switch this order around? Does that bother you?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. We're going to go position player first, and then we're going to go offense, and then we'll go Ace, rotation, and bullpen. So I'm going to give myself number one overall pick for position player. I'm happy to have it. I got a lot of love. Again, I'm allowed to be biased. There's a lot of good players out there. Bazan is one of them. I'm taking the dude with 30 jacks. So I'm going to go Charlie Condon here. He's got 30 bombs. I don't think I need to say anymore.
I was actually – it's funny you say that because I was planning on going with Travis Bazana to start. So we're both getting our top choice there. And I don't even know why. What Charlie Condon's done this year is super impressive. Being able to be the best player in arguably the BB Corps era history, putting up just an unreal season. He's probably going to sign for over $7 million in a couple of months. He's going to be in a good position financially. He's going to move quick through any farm system. But Travis Bazana, I think, brings the element of just a little bit more well-rounded, I guess is the best way to describe it, which is hard to do, but draws a little bit more walks. He has a little bit better bat-to-ball skills. Charlie Condon obviously can leave the yard. Travis Bazana also brings a little bit of speed element to his game. Hasn't run a ton this year, but last year he had 36 bags, so you get that dynamic guy at the top of your order. Well, I would hit him too, but get him hitting in the two-hole, get some guys around him, and then you're in a good spot.
Yeah, there was plenty to choose from there. I think there's plenty to choose from in this category too, and you can go ahead and start it off with which lineup do you want to insert Bazana into and have to roll?
Oh, well. All right, so we're going to have to move some things around on this lineup.
It's all right. I know. They might play a position of a guy you want. Don't worry about it. We're ignoring it. This is fantasy land.
We're just going to replace the bottom guy in this lineup. Oh, well,
don't worry about position.
With that being the case, and we don't have to worry about defense because then I'd have a middle infield. I guess, you know what? I'm putting Bazana at shortstop. Christian Moore, Bazana up the middle, probably the best hitting middle infield combo in college baseball history, maybe. You stack that with Billy Amick. We got Blake Burke. That's just an unbelievable infield. Caveras Terrace has been unreal this year, top to bottom in the lineup. I mean, again, as we said, Tennessee rakes. They're hitting 340 at home. Oops. 325 on the road. 121 bombs on the year. Everybody rakes in that club.
All right, look. I really want to pull at your heartstrings and ask you to picture a lineup that has Vance Honeycutt and Charlie Condon hitting back-to-back, but I'm not going to do that. I think that would be a good answer. They were definitely on the big board. They're number one in the nation, man. Like, I know Tennessee's offense is unbelievable, but Coach Schlossnagel has an unbelievable offense at A&M. So you can have the head coach. I'm going to take his horses because at the end of the day, coach is only as good as his horses. And a lineup with Charlie Condon and Braden Montgomery in the rest of what those guys are doing, Jackson Appel, Gavin Grahovic, the impressive freshman. And you just slide a guy with 30 bombs into that, you would be sitting Jace LaViolette. So it would be scary. And I know it plays big once we get to Omaha, but to get to Omaha, let me tell you something. We have a guy with 23 bombs, 22 bombs, 16 bombs, and we just got a guy with 30 bombs coming over from Athens. So good luck.
I couldn't imagine either of those offenses with these guys.
No. Pretty crazy. We'll go
taking the first draft pick here.
Yeah, I'm going to go first here for Ace. Again, we're allowed to have biases when we do this. I think there's not really a wrong answer. I have several guys here on my big board. I'll be interested to see who you go with. I think you know who I'm going to take. It's Hagan Smith.
It's already typed in the rundown.
It is already typed into the rundown. Yeah, it's Hagan Smith. I mean, everybody knows. I think he's just ridiculous. The dude throws 98. I think I don't get first rotation pick, which also pushes me there. He's 98 from the left side. I get into a postseason game. What do I want? I want a guy who can go do something ridiculous, like can take the air out of the other side, like striking out 17 guys in six innings. Because if you can dominate a lineup like that, dominate a lineup with a guy like Travis Bazzana in it, you're pretty darn good. I think he's the best pitcher in college baseball this year. And when you're pitching deep in the postseason, that's kind of what you need.
All right, for my ace. So when we go to pick our starting rotation, do we get to replace anybody in the rotation, or do we have to replace the ace?
No. Replace whoever you want. Like I said, fantasy league. You replace whoever you want. So even fantasy league. So let's say one of us takes Arkansas. Let's say you take Arkansas since I took Hagan Smith. You can have Hagan Smith too. Go ahead. We both have him. We can share.
It's interesting. Yeah,
it changes things. I know.
It changes things.
I didn't my pitcher's rotation pick.
Trey Yesavage. He's putting up unreal numbers this year. It was very hard for me. Obviously, it was between him or Chase Burns at this point in time. Chase Burns, not that he's slowed. He's been fine through the second half of the year, but I guess that's kind of the point, is he's been fine. I know Trey Yesavage pitches in the American Athletic Conference compared to Chase Burns having to pitch in the ACC each and every weekend, but he has been just unbelievable this year. Batting average against sub 150. It seems like he never gives up a hit. He's punching out a ton of dudes. We saw him live. The stuff is for real. The split change is a weapon. He's going to make a lot of money here in a couple months, and it's easy 95 miles per hour.
Yeah, that he was also on my big board along with Chase Burns and Jamie Arnold. Was on my board because
that would have been stunned.
All right, let's go. Let me hear your rotation. I think there's a couple clear ones here. I don't know where you're going to go. Knowing you, I think I know where you're going to go, but go ahead.
It's tough because I always err on the side of talent, and I always worry that that's going to back me in a corner, but I can't go with anybody but Arkansas. I saw today the numbers for their starting rotation. I believe the next – so they're pitching to like a mid-3 in the SEC play alone. The next closest is like a 4-7 in the SEC play. Like this is just a dominant rotation. They're in a very good spot. I would take every single one of their pitchers, including their pitching coach, and I would not bat an eye and still think I have the best rotation. I guess I'm moving out Mason Molina. I don't know. I mean, do we get to move him into the pen? Brady Taggart just throws gas.
Well, you're going to take a different bullpen unless you take their bullpen. We are going to select a bullpen here in a second. So, oh well.
So I'm going to Arkansas here.
I'm torn. Okay, so this is where it gets interesting to me, because we talk about it. We talk about stuff. We talk about swing and miss. Wake Forest, I know they haven't been great. They have a ton of stuff. If you paired, you know, I have Hagan Smith. I can pair him with Chase Burns and probably Michael Massey this year, because Hartle hasn't lived up to expectations.
It's pretty good. That's what I was thinking about, too. That's pretty good.
Good 1-2-3. I think that's where I'm going to go with it. I think – listen, here's where I'm struggling. I could have Hagan Smith and Jamie Arnold pitching at the top of the rotation, and I don't care. Give me Cam Leiter. Give me whoever else you want to slide into that 3 slot. But I'm not going to say
Cam Leiter's pretty good.
I'm gonna go with Wake Forest. I just think, could you imagine rolling up to a weekend and having to get Hagan Smith and Chase Burns and Michael Massey back to back? It's like, where does it stop? It doesn't.
No, that's a good choice. That is a very good choice. Who do you got for your bullpen?
All right. Bullpen here was a little bit tougher because, you know, Clemson obviously has a deep bullpen. They were on my draft board, but I'm going to, again, the number one team in the nation. I know I already took their lineup, but I'm going to go with their bullpen. Guys like Brad Rudess, guys like Shane Snow, guys who have pitched bulk innings out of the bullpen for Texas A&M with really good numbers. They generate swings and miss. They all have minor ERAs. Chris Cortez has been huge for them to extend when they've needed them. Pitch, you know, 3 1/3. You see them do that all the time. And then they can turn to other high leverage guys. Right now, it feels like A&M's bullpen is kind of like they've got great pitching all year. Obviously, we've talked about Ryan Prager on here before and what the numbers he's put up. But A&M's bullpen, man, like they just come in and I feel like it's not talked about that much. But when you're the number one team in the country, you probably have a pretty darn good bullpen.
100%. I'm sticking with I'm just going all in. I've been a Matt Hobbs fan for how long? Arkansas Razorbacks, give me Mason Molina out of the pen. They have the most dudes in the nation that throw 100 miles per hour. There's no question about it. They could probably roll a brigade of 100 miles per hour throwers out of that bullpen. Give me that with Trey Savage. I don't know where the runs are going to come from. I don't know.
I think we just built – this was a fun exercise. We just built two teams that would be absolutely insane to watch play.
They wouldn't lose.
Isn't it funny how you take certain pieces and you can build? Because I think that was kind of the fun thing of it, part of the exercise. Like, even if you didn't do – like, if you just put those guys, like, take that ace and put them in one of the lineups or one of the pitching staffs, and like, it just – the dynamic that it changes. And honestly, that's kind of why, like, it goes to the point too, just why I thought Wake Forest was going to be so good, because they did this, right? They got a guy like Chase Burns and put it into a rotation, and you were like, it's going to happen. Unfortunately, it hasn't gone the way we thought it would, but could this happen one of these days in the transfer portal era? It probably could.
I mean, like you said, I think it's about as close as it was ever going to get is this season, where you're like, Josh Hartle, Michael Massey, both pretty good. And then it's like, oh my gosh, Chase Burns, pretty good too. Mm-hmm. So any closing thoughts before I go through a nice little rundown of the series that we'll be looking out for?
No, go ahead.
Perfect. So big series across the country. We have the biggest one in the SEC, as number 2 Arkansas travels north and east to Lexington, Kentucky, where Kentucky Wildcats try to stop the bleeding. We have number 20 NC State heading south down to Tallahassee to take on the Florida State Seminoles. Number 23 Alabama heads to Mississippi State. Mississippi State is coming off a huge series win on the road against Vanderbilt. You know that crowd is going to be buzzing. Alabama is catching them at the worst time because they have a lot of momentum. Number 3 Tennessee faces a potential trap series with the talented Florida Gators. That is not a team that you want to run into, excuse me, especially with the I'm drawing a blank on his name, but they have a nice little Friday night guy who looked like a clone of Randy Johnson and Chris Sale, who has been rehabbing injuries, and he looks like he's going to be back. Number 22, Oklahoma looks to widen the gap in the Big 12 as they take on Texas Tech in Lubbock. And then Gardner-Webb running Bulldogs play host to the Wofford Watering Whales as they come north and a little east, depending on how traffic is and how they get there. But Gardner-Webb is playing the Wofford Whales. Wofford is my number one team in the country. The Watering Whales, they always come in, you know, playing good baseball, and it's not a team you want to see. Couple other series here. Number 14, Oklahoma State heads to Austin to play Texas. Oklahoma State's been playing really good baseball. They're looking to try to catch their in-state rivals, Oklahoma, in the Big 12 standings. Number 18, Louisiana Lafayette heads to Alabama to take on Troy. For those that did not know, it's not Troy, New York. It's Troy, Alabama. And then number 17, Vanderbilt heads to Georgia, number 19, where they will be, where maybe just maybe both teams will be using stick. Interesting. And maybe Georgia, both teams might be stealing signs. Who knows? It's just SEC baseball. It just means more. And we'll see you next time on the Backside Ground Balls podcast.